You can listen to The Professional Left wherever you get your podcasts, on Netroots Radio, or at our website, proleftpod.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for October 28th, 2022. It's Not Safe for Work.
Recorded live from the Cornfield Resistance, where we're celebrating the 10th anniversary of the grand opening of Mitt Romney's Mexican Heritage Self-Deportation Cantina, it's The Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal. Has it been 10 years, Blue Gal?
The Romney years. Boy, halcyon days.
President Romney really changed this country for the
I remember Mrs. Romney's servant slapping. Remember the...
Oh, I do. I do.
Yeah, we did a whole bunch of stuff on that. Those were innocent days.
The days of our youth. I was a barefoot boy with cheeks of tan.
And this week, you're another year older, Drift Glass.
Yeah, happy old man.
Birthday. Happy right. birthday.
It's true. I am.
Happy birthday, Drift Glass, on Sunday, the 30th.
Sunday the 30th, yes. Yes,
he
yes.
will have traveled 62 years around the
around
sun.
Around the sun.
Yeah.
Yes, on this little planet. I will probably, you know, go out and open a tip jar up and go, hey, 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 yeah. what yeah. about some money for the birthday boy? Which, you know, works as well as it's going to work. But it's, yeah, it's been a number of years. And I've spent 60 of those 62 years blogging, apparently. So,
well, my 18th blogiversary, you reminded me yesterday.
Yes. Yeah.
Is Wednesday, the 2nd of November.
That's right.
I started blogging on Election Day 2004.
Yes, you did.
Which was the day Bush was reelected somehow.
Yes, he was.
We're still stunned by that. But 18 years is a long time to be writing about politics.
And you and I, as we've mentioned, were talking and thinking and active in politics long before that.
Yeah, well, and I was remembering the other day, you know, there are high school people on Facebook and everywhere. What I wanted to be, what I wrote for my essay for applying for a scholarship from my high school about what I wanted to do when I got older, was I wanted to be a political speechwriter. That was at 18. So, you know, yep. it wasn't that far off from mm-hmm. where I wound up. So, but happy birthday, Drift Glass.
Well,
and,
thank you, Blue
you
Gal.
Know, time passes and life is precious and I love you very much. And I don't want to not say that because life is short. There have just been so many people.
I was going to say, what did you hear?
Well, no, I've noticed a lot of people this week younger than us passing away.
Yeah.
Celebrities and so forth and news readers in England and you know, died on the air at age 55. And, you know, you never know what's going to happen. So,
yeah. All men are mortal.
All men are mortal. So it's important. And it's important to just treasure every day and tell the people you care about that you care about them. So we love our listeners. We love doing this. And thank you for being there for us.
Yeah. It's the price of admission to this wild ride.
Yep. That's right.
So, you know, and I'll pay it every time.
Right. Right. Somebody probably needs to go back and consider some of his life choices, Drift Glass.
Yeah, yeah.
Is running for the United States Senate. And that's the first thing I would have reconsidered if I were him.
Yeah. Well, see, that does not decrease the size of the field of choices at all. There are lots of people who shouldn't be running for the U.S. Senate who are currently. But I think you're referring to professional football person and mumble-mouth lunatic, Herschel Walker.
Yeah.
And you and I had a conference call with each other, like we do, and we determined that America needs Bob Odenkirk right now.
Oh, they do. Yeah.
To cut an ad as Saul Goodman.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do a particularly good Saul Goodman, but I'll do my best. Do you know you have rights? Well, the Constitution says you do. Were you or any member of your family impregnated by Herschel Walker? Perhaps impregnated more than once? You may be entitled to significant compensation. Like that, except for like 30 seconds to a minute with Bob Odenkirk shaking his fist and asking people to call his 800 number.
1-800-CALL-SAUL. Yes.
1-800-IMPREGNATE. 1-800-INSEMINATE. 1-800-ABORTION. You know, there's a lot of 1-800 Walker, 1-800 Herschel. There's lots of options there. So Bob,
the Heisman Abortion Clinic.
Mm-hmm. Get a little trophy. It'll be great. A little mock trophy.
Man.
Yeah, it's we really need Mr. Odenkirk to bring his talents to bear on this. I think it's
I think that would be good. That would be good. Driftglass, you know, I was kind of depressed on Tuesday.
I noticed it was very rainy.
It was pouring down rain all day. And Twitter just got the best of me in terms of, you know, the New York Times every other day is predicting some sort of red wave, imagined or not. And the framing of elections is always horse race this and horse race that.
Yeah.
And it got to the point Tuesday, you know, I went to bed. I was just exhausted and tired and sad and just told you I can't anymore.
I took your phone out for a long talk. And your phone and I decided you don't get to be on Twitter more than like 20 minutes a day.
No, for work. That's it.
Yeah, I know.
And I woke up the next day. It was sunny out. I felt better. You know, seasonal affective disorder is real. You can feel down when it's just gloomy. And I felt better after some sleep and some and sleep perspective and so forth. And then last night, Wednesday night, Alex Wagner had as her chyron and screen behind her.
Yeah.
Be afraid. Be very afraid.
Yeah. Thanks.
And I just thought, okay.
Yeah.
Who is governing my thinking at this moment, and why? Why is this the message? And the fact is that fear is an incredible motivator for
it is.
Anyone who wants to motivate you to keep watching MSNBC, to get out the vote. I do think that the people hosting shows and producing shows on our quote unquote liberal television, most of them do want Democrats to win.
I have my doubts.
You have your doubts. Well,
I have my doubts.
You know, it's better for their ratings if they don't. You're right.
Yeah.
But you and I have been attending adult Sunday school, a different kind of adult Sunday school, which is much more theological.
Right.
History related and dealing with multicultural, not just Christianity, but actually it's Joseph. We're studying Joseph Campbell. We're watching Joseph Campbell videos. These particular Joseph Campbell videos happen to be from like the 1980s.
Yeah. 80s, I'm guessing. Yeah.
Introduced by 1980 Susan Sarandon, which is kind of a tongue biting moment, but
no,
there she is. But what's interesting about that is we see many of the biblical stories have precedents in other cultures.
Yeah. Parallels and precedents.
And precedents and you see the commonality of some of these stories. And if you're not threatened by that, because you're a fundamentalist and, you know, you think, oh, the Bible is the inherent word of God, then just studying it from the standpoint of literature is very interesting.
Yeah, the origin myths of lots of different cultures is it's always interesting. Mm-hmm. How did we get here? What did they value? How did we get to where we are now? Things like that.
Right. And so I've been thinking about that this week because this pre-election era, this moment that we all have to get through, and all of us are PTSD from 2016.
Well, and you mentioned 2004.
Yeah, I mean,
this does vibe that with that way too. If you remember the way back then, it's like how could anyone in their right mind reelect this incompetent, dry, drunk halfwit who lied us into the wrong war? Like, holy shit, 5% of the people, 3% of the people during the last couple of days switched over and voted for Bush, and all this slander and attacks and swift voting, and the Matthew Dowd running the campaign, the gay bashing, it all worked.
We
were stunned. We were just absolutely stunned that was possible, given his objective track record. So we've been through this many times before.
Well, and as I tweeted this week, you know, I'm still not over the Republican Party trying to take away my health insurance in 2017 and having a beer party a Bud Light beer party in the Rose Garden with Donald Trump to celebrate. And Liz Cheney was there.
Yes, she was.
So, but sure all of this kind of anxiety and fear and worry about how this election is going to turn out, I know is getting a lot of us down.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me think of the story of Noah's Ark, which is, to me, one of the silliest stories in the Old Testament.
Yeah, it's yeah.
There's, man builds a boat, puts two of every animal in it. It's a lovely children's story, you know, if you want to talk about animals. But to think about it, and this is something that's not covered in the scripture and not covered in most retellings of the story, which is the 40 days and 40 nights.
Right.
Right. By the way, 40 days and 40 nights is everywhere in ancient literature, in Asian literature, in Mesopotamian literature. You know, that time period is...
Well, 40 years in 40 the wilderness.
That number just shows up a lot. Mm-hmm. So, but the 40 days and 40 nights. And if you just think of it as a story, Noah didn't know. He didn't know that the olive branch was going to be out there.
Nope.
He didn't know it was going to be 40 days. God didn't tell him it was going to be 40 days. He sat there in the boat with these stinky animals and waited.
Well, it rained and rained.
And it rained and rained and rained. And it could have been years. It could have been.
And everything died.
Die here.
Right. Everything died. The entire planet, according to the myth, everything on Earth died, except for the fish, I assume, who did quite well. Yeah.
And there Noah didn't take any fish on the ark.
No. But there was no Steve Kornacki with a whiteboard saying, you know, here's what it looks like, folks.
Yes, that's right.
What? It's going to rain forever. Oh, no.
No. Yeah. Right. Right. And there was no New York Times saying, yes, the economy is doing better, but that doesn't mean there's not going to be a recession.
Yeah.
Recognize that mental manipulation, that everyone out there that's trying to tell you, here's what's going to happen, and it's dire.
Doesn't know.
It's trying to paralyze you in front of the TV set or in front of the phone. And the thing to do is to get to your people, the people you care about, and get them to vote.
Yeah.
That's
your job. Exactly.
Vote yourself and get the people within your reach. And if you can do postcards to voters or phone banking or door-to-door knocking or whatever else it is in your community.
Yeah, do that.
To get out the vote. I know your congressional Democratic candidate would love for you to stop by.
Mm-hmm.
Pick up a lawn sign. Drop out a few bucks in the bucket. Write some postcards, make some phone calls.
And all you have to do is sit perfectly still for about 3 minutes and they will call you.
Or text you. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Martin Sheen will text you.
Yes, he will.
Say, hey, pal. Hey, buddy. How about for President Bartlett, how about you get out there and knock a few doors? Like, okay, fine. I'll do it. But yeah, there's a lot of opportunity to take that nervous, uncertain, slightly terrified energy and channel it into productive activity.
Right. So, and eventually the olive branch shows up in the mouth of the bird and you move on and you do the next thing. And we'll see how it goes. And all we can do is vote and get other people to vote.
Well, after the olive branch, eventually after some months or some period of time, you end up pissed drunk face down in your barn.
And your own kids have to come in and cover you up.
Dad's in there drunk again. Yeah, yeah. He's like, oh, look what I did. I saved the world. And, you know, okay, Dad,
he was depressed because he gave everything and then no one thanked him. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Come on, man.
Don't expect any appreciation for getting out the vote, folks.
Oh, God, no. No. If one thing
doesn't give you a thank you note.
No, there's no parade for activists.
No. Nope.
And you will be deeply resented by people who turn out to be wrong and you turn out to be right. I can attest to that
all the time. Yep. Yep. Also, on election night, you know, we have a tradition of watching our favorite Rodney Dangerfield movie.
Yes.
Caddyshack. So we watch Caddyshack on election night.
Yeah. The ball's in the air. There's nothing you can do.
The ball's in the air. It's going to drop when it drops. And it's out of our control now. Polls are closed. Take a breath. Watch Caddyshack. That's our mental health break. Yeah. Let's talk about some of the debate performances this week.
Yeah, one specific debate performance I'd like to focus on. You and I sat around trying to come up with the most apt representation of Ron DeSantis' debate performance this week. We ran through a lot of options. We tried on the fields of Trenzalore at the fall of the 11, when no living creature may speak falsely or fail to give answer. Charlie Crist asked Ron DeSantis a question. It will be asked, a question that must never, ever be answered. That is from Doctor Who, and it's pretty good.
That's pretty good, yeah.
Then, of course, the answer to all questions that don't involve the Godfather is Jaws. So we're like, oh, Quint from Jaws. The thing about DeSantis is he's got lifeless eyes, black eyes, like a doll's eyes. When you debate him, he don't even seem like he's living. And that fits pretty well.
That's he's pretty good.
Blank, dead-eye, doll-eye person. But we settled on the last 45 seconds or minute of Psycho with Anthony Perkins sitting in a room surrounded by a blanket, staring at the camera, talking in the voice of his mother, saying...
And he's in a cell.
He's in a
questioning room.
He's in a locked ward.
The cops have him. Yeah.
And he's in the voice of his mother, who you haven't heard because she's dead. Mm-hmm. Spoiler. As if I could do anything except just sit and stare like one of his stuffed birds. Well, they know I can't even move a finger, and I won't. I'll just sit here and be quiet just in case they do suspect me. They're probably watching me. Well, let them. Let them see what kind of person I am. I'm not even going to swat that fly. I hope they are watching. They'll see. They'll see and they'll know. And they'll say, why, she wouldn't even harm a fly. And that...
Creepy! Halloween!
Happy Halloween, everybody. Because he stood there like a mannequin when Charlie Crist asked him a very basic question. You're running for governor. I know you think you're running against Biden, but he's not on the ballot. You're running for governor. Will you pledge right now to serve your whole term? And DeSantis... I don't know if he wanted to call a friend or a lifeline or ask for another question or run away or just piss himself. But that is not a question he was prepared to answer, and he didn't answer it. He just sat there looking like an idiot.
Well, he is never in any situation that is not Fox News.
Right,
and
exactly.
Here he had to be in a situation. And in his situation where he's governor, he just bullies everybody.
Yeah. Why does, he
and
have
this
to
was a debate
anybody.
Stage where he had to follow rules.
Mm-hmm.
And now, to be fair, Charlie Crist asking him a direct question, that was not something that the debate moderators expected or anyone expected.
No.
But you got to be prepared for that. And there is an answer to that.
The answer
is, speaking as someone who wanted to be a political speechwriter in high school, you know, you said, the people of Florida trust me more than they trust you, Charlie Crist. That's what you say.
That's right. Done. And you move on.
And you're done. And, you know, no one can foresee the future, but I believe in the people of Florida and I trust them and they trust me and you're done. That's it. Yeah.
But so, that brings up the question of what do debates do anyway?
Right. Right. They are dying. They are dying as an institution because candidates can find a workaround to reach voters.
Sure.
And voters don't want to sit and listen to that for 90 minutes.
Used to be the League of Women Voters, and you have a certain number of presidential debates. And they were treated with some solemnity. And then it turned into a Fox News, you know, fuck around-a-rama. It was just a mess. Mm-hmm. And I remember vividly watching all the debates in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
I even was teaching at Columbia College at the time and had my class, which was a basic technology class. We're taking the time off. We're going to watch the Dick Cheney vice presidential debate.
Oh, wow.
And it was like, this won't count towards your grade, but I think it's important for your civic health that as long as you have to be in this classroom and I can force you to do whatever I want, we're going to watch a vice presidential debate. And it was, you know, it was terrible. But Bush was awful in all three debates.
Yeah.
Terrible. I mean, unprepared, sweaty, twitchy, didn't have good answers, just the worst kind of coked out, unprepared, dumbass Bush. And I remember Hunter Thompson writing about, I was embarrassed for him. I felt bad for him until they called him Mr. President. And then I was just ashamed.
Yeah, right.
And he
right.
just stood there being a fucking moron for three different debates and he won.
Yeah.
He won. And that's like, oh, okay, I guess debates are like a ritual we perform now.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's all setting up for a clip for a 30-second ad.
Yeah.
But believe me, as a high school debater, I know what debates look like. And those are not debates. Those are prepared remarks delivered at cross purposes, regardless of what any of the speak of, because the three people in front are timekeepers. They're not judges.
In search of a gotcha moment.
Yeah, that's it. That's all it is. In debate, there are two sides. There's of an issue and you have a timekeeper and you have a judge or a panel of judges. And the judges decide who win or lose. The people who decide who wins and loses are sponsors and the people in the audience jeering or clapping or sneering or crying. That's it.
And Twitter. Yeah.
The debates are decided after the debate, after people spin. Now, I would like you to talk a little bit about an obscure politician whose name you've never heard
again.
Yeah,
I want to talk about Everett Stern of Pennsylvania, who you may have never heard of. And you may never hear the name Everett Stern again, but you will hear his name on this podcast because of what he did on behalf of our democracy and the state of Pennsylvania. Stern was, until this week, a candidate for U.S. Senate from Pennsylvania. And you've never heard of him because he was running as an independent.
Yes, he was.
But he's not running for Senate anymore. He dropped out. And he threw his support behind John Fetterman because the race between Fetterman and Oz has tightened. And here's what Everett Stern announced. Quote, "I am polling around 3%, which places democracy at risk. In the interest of protecting the United States, I am dropping out of the U.S. Senate race in Pennsylvania. I fully endorse John Fetterman. The Democrats must win. Pennsylvania must be blue. It has been an honor running." Now, 1,000 national headlines have been written about how Democrats bowing out of the Utah Senate race and supporting Evan McMullen, Evan both sides McMullen, by the way.
Yeah.
Yep. Was the better part of valor on behalf of Democrats, and they're probably right. But wouldn't it be nice if the national press could spare a few headlines for Everett Stern doing the right thing for Pennsylvania?
That would be nice. Come on, guys.
Thank you, Everett.
Yeah, and just
thank you for doing that. And Olbermann, he didn't have to do it.
No. Keith Olbermann should give him a shout out.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, if you want to hear a scathingly wonderful podcast today.
Today. My gosh.
Skip on over to the Keith Olbermann podcast for Thursday, and you'll hear all about Joe Scarborough and what a scumbag Joe Scarborough is and John Fetterman.
I needed a cigarette, and I don't smoke.
Yeah.
It was so viciously correct.
It was the early days of the liberal blogosphere set to music. It was, you know, John Fetterman's performance was amazing and heroic, and he spoke, and he's recovering, and you fucking asshole, how dare you? And by the way, Joe Scarborough, you've changed your personality 100 degrees, 150 degrees, 180 degrees every 3 years. Yeah. And then he recounts Joe Scarborough's long, filthy history as a complete hack who will side with anyone, anywhere, depending on which way the wind is blowing. And it's very good. And it's quite accurate. And it sounds a lot like, you know,
liberal
your favorite
bloggers
podcast.
Remembering the past. Yes. Yeah.
Dangerous people. Speaking of headlines, remembering the past. Since every one of these goofs has distinguished themselves this week, I could either pick on poor old David Brooks, but we have a whole separate podcast for that.
We have a podcast drop this week on No Fair Remembering Stuff, David Brooks again.
Part one. Ooh.
Part one.
Ooh. Or Matthew Dowd, who was on the air doing Matthew Dowd things, or Hugh Hewitt, who thoroughly embarrassed himself again, or Michael Gerson. And I picked on Michael Gerson. I picked on him this week because he wrote a column entitled, "Gaffes Aside, I once assumed GOP goodwill on race. I was wrong." And then he wrote, with clearly a grimace on his face, that this was among the worst errors of moral judgment I have made as a columnist, which it certainly was. But it was also a political judgment and a practical judgment and a judgment about
a paycheck judgment.
Absolutely. This is a Bush administration hack. This is an advisor to George Bush. And a Washington Post writer for years and years and years, which I'm about to get to. And then he sort of removes himself from the story because in the headline, I assumed I was wrong. I'm thinking, okay, this is the time for you to unburden yourself and declare liberals to be right and so on and so forth. It was not that. He removed himself from the picture entirely and sort of hovered over American history and gave a Wikipedia entry about how awful slavery was, which it was, and Jim Crow, and it was, and talking about the modern GOP in terms of how they did this and they did that, and the current state of the MAGA world, not the Republican world, but the MAGA world. And the article wildly underplays Michael Gerson's deep complicity in driving the GOP into the racist abyss where it now lives, and his really jaw-dropping cluelessness about the actual state of the party once Trump appeared on the scene. He really did appear to be completely caught off guard by the fact the Republican Party was full of Republicans. And I have a list. I did a long, long post that I'm not going to bore you with. Maybe in some future episode of No Fair Remembering Stuff, I'll do it in more detail.
Oh, I bet there will be one on this. Yeah.
I bet there will. This is a small sample of Gerson headlines and a sentence or two from the Obama era and then pivoting into the rise of Trump. And I'll do it pretty quick. Okay. The politics of bitterness. Barack Obama, it turns out, has a knack for undermining his own political strengths. He was supposed to be the post-racial candidate, but he has associated himself for decades with a tradition of black liberation that views all of American life through the prism of pigment. Oh no, Obama cedes the center. The GOP is not far from snatching the ideological middle for years to come. GOP is going to be the centrist party because Barack Obama is so crazy. There was Obama the betrayer, Obama the snob, Obama's shamelessness, which is what makes him a unique historical figure because he's the most shameless president in history. RIP, yes, we can. Obama's policies feed the country's polarization. Far from halting and reversing these trends, Obama has worsened them, setting the stage for the most polarized election in recent history. Obama is already one of the most consistently polarizing presidents in the last 60 years. What Gerson is saying is he's black and it makes the racist GOP crazy. Obama's recipe for endless culture war. The politics of polarization. Obama has helped make Washington more broken. Obama shoves idealism into the grave. The president sees even more commonplace disagreements as indicative of his opponent's bad faith. And this was the point, and even Ezra Klein, mild-mannered Ezra Klein, wrote about this, when Michael Gerson started openly blaming Barack Obama for the rage and lunacy of his party. And Gerson, at this moment, was joined by David Brooks, who cooked up an entire imaginary monologue with a White House staffer that never happened, discussing Obama's secret sinister plans to destroy the GOP by forcing them to be racist and crazy. These are two nationally syndicated conservative big thinking columnists at the Washington Post and the New York Times who have a zillion other gigs throughout the media writing this bullshit during the Obama years, which everyone has forgotten apparently. Obama the detached and insufficient, Obama the divider, Obama will end up leaving Democrats in worse shape. Michael Gerson repeatedly blamed the failure of government to pass comprehensive immigration reform on, and I kid you not, Barack Obama's off-putting manner, which is elite pundit speak for uppity. Mm-hmm. What he meant to say was Barack Obama is an uppity black man, and we just can't deal with that. My party just can't deal with that. Then we hit 2015, and Michael Gerson began cranking out column after column about how Donald Trump could not possibly win. A GOP led by Donald Trump will fail and deserve it. Conservatives should stay far away from Trump's ethnic polarization. He means racism. Donald Trump will inevitably flame out, and here's why. Tuesday's GOP debate separated the serious candidates from the loons. Of course, Trump was the loon. Trump's toxic temperament should disqualify him from the presidency. Trump is the demagogue our founding fathers feared. Rush Limbaugh's blessing, Rush Limbaugh enters the picture, of Trump is killing conservatism. Evangelicals must not bear the mark of Trump, and the party of Lincoln is dying. That's the pattern of Michael Gerson's columns over the course of about 10 years. The entire Obama administration spent demonizing Obama in the most vicious, venomous, lying language possible at the Washington Post, and the base of the party loving him for it. And then warning that Donald Trump was a racist and a very naughty man, and the base telling him to fuck off. And he never noticed that the crowd he was playing to all those years and getting all that adoration from loved him because he was slandering a black man that they hated. Mm-hmm. And then he decided, well, you know, Donald Trump's a racist. We can't elect him. They were like, fuck you. Fuck you. This is our boy. And he couldn't understand why. It didn't penetrate his big, dumb head that he's been playing to a racist mob the whole time.
Right.
Whole time. His whole party exists. It is a mob of bigots. And at the top of the party, he was free to just pretend it wasn't happening, pretend that wasn't really there. I don't know that he's ever met a real Republican in his entire life. And then suddenly, his party doesn't make any sense to him. And all these years later, Michael Gerson writes a column saying, oh, oopsie, guess I was wrong. Guess the Republican Party was racist. That's unfortunate. That's really too bad. And the worst of them were the evangelicals, were his personal religious pocket that he played in, because he's an evangelical too. And I just am fucking sick and tired. You know, the road to Damascus ended about 10 years ago. You know? Yeah, you don't get to pretend, if you really are that stupid, Michael Gerson, if you are that fucking clueless, you do not have any business being paid for your opinions anywhere. If you're wrong, if you're that wrong, and you're a religious man, go into the wilderness. Spend 40 years eating locusts and eating honey and staying the fuck away from politics, because clearly you know nothing, nothing about this country. And that's what drives me crazy. These people continue to have jobs long after history and fact has shown they have no business having any place at the media table.
But Driftglass, I think you're missing one point, and that is the bubble that Michael Gerson and his friends live in, which is where politics is a game. This is a company town. You know, whether it's New York and the media or Washington and government and politics, you get along with. You know, you get along with Chuck Schumer, you get along with so-and-so, you get along with everybody, and you go to parties and book parties. I'll never forget the book launch part, the book launch party for Mark Halperin's Way to Win book.
Everybody was there.
Hillary Clinton showed up, John McCain showed up, because it's ABC News, and all the right people have to be there.
Yep.
And it's everybody have a glass of Chardonnay and laugh. And it's not about, now, you know, Hillary Clinton has to play the game as much as anybody else to get her book deals and to get her books and her media company and so on and so forth. I still think she cares about children and health insurance. I give her a pass because my kids have health insurance because of Hillary Clinton.
Simple as that, really.
Simple as that. But for the Michael Gersons and so forth of this world, it for so many years until Trump, it was a game. And I think the same level of hatred in some ways, you know, Trump is an outlier because he is a fucking racist.
Yeah.
And he was utterly incompetent. And all of the people that he hired to be in the White House were grifters. Ultimately, he faked it at the beginning, and a lot of people went on, you know, like Rex Tillerson and so forth, went in to save the country, so to speak, and told themselves they were saving the country by trying to manage departments while this monster was sitting at the Resolute desk. But in the end, everybody that was in that White House was just a grifter. And I still think, however, that a lot of the level of media hatred for Donald Trump was also leveled at Jimmy Carter. Because you're not part of our village.
Right. Bill Clinton, too.
Yeah. Bill Clinton, too. And Hillary Clinton, too. Yeah. Because this town, and that's the name of a book, by the way, you know, this town is for us. It's not for you. It's not for the professional left. It's not for all the people at the diner in Michigan.
It's
you
for them.
People out there are to be governed by us, but we're the ones with opinions that matter. We are the published opinion makers of the country. And if our opinion during the Bush administration is different from our opinion during the Trump administration, suck it up.
Yeah. Well, and you know who, there's a scene from the first Nolan Batman movie with Gordon, Jim Gordon, who's lieutenant at that point, sitting in a car, and his partner's offering to, you know, include him in a bribe. And he's like, well, you know, you don't take the bribe. People suspect you're a rat. He says, I'm no rat. And then he says very grimly, besides in a town this bent, who is there to rat to?
Right.
You know, in Washington, where do you go to get justice?
To say Gerson is wrong.
Right.
Who do you tell?
There is no place to go.
No.
And that is the virtue, I think, of our longer format, No Fair Remembering Stuff podcast, because we're just doing what the media should do, mm-hmm. which is all these people who swear they're telling you the passionate innermost beliefs of their heart, like Matthew Dowd believes with all of his heart and soul and marrow and pith that both sides are terrible and the corrupt duopoly must be destroyed and Hillary's just as bad as Donald Trump. And then when Trump wins, blah, 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 a few years pass, he says with the same passion and earnestness, both sides' journalism is terrible. The media is wrecking us all. Can't just you? Who did this to us? Like, fucker, you did this to us. And
but you can't prove it. I deleted my Twitter.
I deleted all my Twitters, so you can't prove it. And he is surrounded by fellow Bush administration dead-enders like Nicole Waltz, who will never call him out.
No.
And it is not just their rancid hypocrisy. It's not that they just wear a false face on television and they switch it out depending on which position they want to take. It's that their passion about Trump was accountability.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, who's going to hold these people accountable? And these assholes are all about holding people accountable for the things they did in the last 5 years. That's all they want to talk about, the last five or 6 years. It's like a magic spell or a ritual or a mantra or a big lie. Because everything bad happened the minute they stopped being one of the assholes. They got kicked out of the club. That's when everything went wrong. And they don't want to talk about 1 minute before that when they were the fucking problem. And they don't want to wear that. They don't want to be anywhere near that. They don't want to do the decent Catholic Christian thing. You know, confess, repent, atone. Do the thing that they teach their children to do, presumably, which is when you're wrong, admit you're wrong. Take it like a man. And they run from accountability. They hide from it. They build an entire media ecosystem to stave off accountability for them and their friends. Mm-hmm. And that's where I just lose it. Because there is no exterior judge or umpire who can kick the door down and drag them out by their short hairs and make them be accountable for the shit they did to this country.
Yeah.
And that's what drives me a little bit up a wall. But on the other hand, let's talk about news aggregators for a minute.
Well, this is just reiterating what we said earlier, you know, that one news aggregator we use said, good news for Dems, 5 points up on the generic ballot. And then right next to it was, want to know why Dems are losing? And it's all clickbait.
It's all clickbait.
Just ignore it. Fuck the polls. Just vote and help others vote. And then again, go watch Caddyshack on election night or whatever you want. Let's do a news roundup, Driftglass.
Let's do that, Blue Gal.
Clarence Thomas.
Oi.
Clarence Thomas freezes the order for Lindsey Graham to testify before a Georgia grand jury investigating the 2020 election because he doesn't give a rat's ass what anyone thinks of him as long as he has power.
Yeah, he's not
and
accountable
again,
to anyone.
Beltway, not accountable to anybody.
No, I mean, theoretically, you can impeach the Supreme Court if you can get 60 people in the Senate to do it, and that'll never happen because he's doing the bidding of the fascist party. Speaking of the fascist party, Lil Marco has a fascist problem. Marco Rubio and every other Republican on earth, apparently, running for office has been making a big thing about a Rubio volunteer getting beaten up, quote, because he's a Republican. But here's the thing, and this is from Jezebel magazine. I immediately smelled a rat, especially considering that Hialeah, Florida, where the incident took place, is a Republican stronghold. As the day goes on, it's become increasingly clear that the story didn't happen the way Rubio said it did. First, the victim in question has been identified as Christopher Monzon, a white supremacist nicknamed the Cuban Confederate, who participated in the neo-Nazi rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, has a history of violence, and is deeply involved in Miami Republican politics. So, there's a whole lot more to the story, as there always is. These people get involved with their white supremacist friends. They put white supremacists and fascists on their staff. And then things go bad and they go, oh my God, my pure as a driven snow young man here was beaten up by those awful Democrats because he's a Republican. Vote for me. Now, it's Florida and it might work because Rubio is in Florida and Florida's a lunatic asylum. But I thought it important to mention that.
And apparently this guy's statement to the police at the time of the incident differed from what he told Marco Rubio and social media. So, yeah, this is that woman who did a backwards B on her cheek.
As we learned, from the Alex Jones trial and the future trial of Donald Trump, what you say to reporters and the press is very different than what you can get away with saying in court under oath.
That's right. Hollywood financier producer MRC says it won't proceed with a Kanye West documentary. The real news is the letter they wrote explaining their reasons.
Yeah.
Do you have that up?
I do. Can I read the second paragraph of that letter?
It was really good.
Yeah. This was recommended to us by our close personal friend, Patton Oswalt. So big shout out to you, Patton. Come on the podcast again.
He went Twitter. He was on Twitter doing that. We don't know him.
That wasn't a DM to me. That wasn't a direct message. Okay,
no, it
fine,
wasn't a DM from Patton Oswalt.
You said it was. This is like every birthday I've ever had.
Patton Oswalt being on the Al Franken podcast sounds like a 2004 blogger. He really does.
Yeah. It's well, you know, 2004 blogging never aged.
No,
it didn't. Or aged like fine wine, rather. It is. What I mean, why don't we just start posting, we told you, we fucking told you so every day on every blog everywhere.
And Patton Oswalt, the reason he sounds like that is because he remembers the past. He remembers the Bush administration. So you know,
Franken and Hal Sparks and Patton Oswalt, these are the guys who have this encyclopedic memory of the past and are ruthless about it.
So Driftglass.
Well, I have a Wikipedia memory. They have an encyclopedic memory. Mine is so full of holes and errors and deletions and et cetera, et cetera. But I do what I can. Here is the second paragraph of that letter. Kanye is a producer and sampler of music. Last week, he sampled and remixed a classic tune that has charted for over 3,000 years, the lie that Jews are evil and conspire to control the world for their own gain. This song was performed a cappella in the time of the pharaohs, Babylon, and Rome, when acoustic with the Spanish Inquisition and Russia's Pale of Settlement, and Hitler took the song electric. Kanye has now helped mainstream it in the modern era.
In other Kanye West news, a spokesperson for the shoe company Skechers says it escorted Kanye West out of its LA office after he arrived unannounced. The shoemaker says, it has no intention of working with him.
Yeah, although I think he should drop his resume off at a company called Sketchy, which I understand is always hiring people. And I'm sure he'd be very, very welcome at Sketchy. Yeah. Start his own company. That's what you do. Right. You know, when the mainstream culture cancels you, you just go and start your own social media shoe company.
My shoes.
My shoes.
My pillow, my shoes, my this. Yeah.
Conservative activists Jacob Wall and Jack Berkman have each pled guilty to one count of telecommunications fraud after authorities in Ohio accused them of running a voter suppression campaign in 2020 that relied on thousands of illegal robocalls that targeted multiple states with election misinformation.
A South Carolina judge ordered Mark Meadows to testify before the Georgia grand jury investigating Trump and his allies' efforts to reverse the results of the 2020 presidential election in the state.
65% of registered Republican voters do not believe that Joe Biden was elected legitimately.
80% of Americans believe that their opposing political party poses a threat that, if not stopped, will destroy America. Half of those people are right, and the other half are Republicans. The Eighth Circuit Court temporarily blocked Biden's student loan forgiveness plan. The stay exists while it considers a motion from six Republican-led states to block the program.
Classified documents recovered by the FBI from Trump's Mar-a-Lago home included U.S. secrets about Iran and China. At least one of the documents described Iran's missile program. Other documents reportedly described the highly sensitive intelligence work aimed at China.
And there are no more Chinese spies at Mar-a-Lago ever, right?
No, never, never.
No, no.
Well, you know, occasionally playing golf, but you can trust those guys.
An estimated 4.6 million people in the United States will be ineligible to vote during this year's midterm elections due to prior felony convictions, roughly 2% of the voting age population in the country. There are currently 11 states that deny voting rights to people even after they've completed their full sentences, including parole and probation. Further, One in 19 African Americans of voting age is disenfranchised, a rate 3.5 times that of non-African Americans. And as you know, Florida voters voted to restore voting rights to those with felony convictions. And the Republican Party decided that, well, but they'll have to pay all their fines and court costs before they can vote.
Yep.
And then the voting act rights activists said, okay, so you're going to bill these people for their court costs and fines, right? We don't have that information. The state doesn't have a database of what people owe in court costs. And then Ron DeSantis sends out his thugs to arrest three of them after they've registered to vote and received voter registration from their local voting officials. And those cases have been dismissed. So, but he accomplished what he wanted to accomplish, which was he sent out thugs to arrest people for voting.
Yep. Yep.
And
that's
so
the plan.
Anyone with a felony conviction has to think that this might be me.
Mm-hmm. Today,
I have opinions about Ron DeSantis that are not airable on this podcast. I will just say that.
I've heard them. If you're ever in the Springfield metropolitan area and would like to go out for coffee or a beer or just sit in a park and swear, we'd be happy to accommodate you.
Some unpublishable opinions that
you will.
Blue Gal has about Ron DeSantis.
She knows some words I didn't even know about. And they're words I don't dare use in any venue.
Yeah.
But, you know, the kind of words that get you in Twitter jail forever.
Oh, yeah, at least.
This week in I Fought the Third Law of Motion and the Third Law of Motion 1 News, the lawyer who fought helmet laws has been killed in a motorcycle crash while not wearing a helmet. Ron Smith, 66, was headed to a memorial service for another biker in August when he crashed his bike as he tried to slow for traffic in front of him. His 62-year-old girlfriend, Brenda Janine Volpe, who was a passenger on the bike, was also killed. She, too, was not wearing a helmet. Smith, who was a member of the Brotherhood Against Totalitarian Enactments, represented clients who broke Florida's motorcycle rules in cases which some say ultimately helped to overturn the state's helmet requirements in the year 2000.
And from alert listener Steve, this headline from the Daily Pantograph. This is local news to Illinois. A flyer circulating in southern Illinois claims Bailey is looking ahead to 2024.
What? He's already given up?
The flyer apparently being distributed by the Friends of Mike Yost, who is the U.S. representative from Illinois' 12th congressional district, which is gerrymandered to be Republican, alleges that the Bailey campaign knows it's doomed. So the plan, they've got a plan, Driftglass, is to accumulate as many votes in Illinois' 12th congressional district and use that as a springboard for a primary challenge of Bost in 2024. Bost faces Democrat Homer Chip Markle in the current election cycle. The flyer says that Bailey knows he cannot win the governor's election. That's the way they put that. Because of liberal votes in crooked Chicago.
Yeah.
That's not the only reason. So the plan is for Bailey to campaign as much as possible in Mike Bost's district and secure as many supporters and votes as possible so he can challenge Mike Bost, I guess, as a rhino. Is that the point?
Move to his right and get into the House of Representatives where he can serve under Speaker Kevin McCarthy and
Marjorie
Taylor Greene.
2024.
Green. Yep.
Mike has always been a friend of ours ever since he was a state rep, the letter continues. Though not encouraging a vote for Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker, the flyer explicitly asked voters not to vote for Bailey. Keep Bailey's vote totals down in Mike's district, it concludes.
Yeah.
Two things about this flyer are objectively true. First, Bailey's campaign is doomed, and at least some of his staff know it. Second, we love it when they turn on each other.
We do. Let them fight. Let them fight.
Mm-hmm. Hey, each week we post to our Facebook page and website at Internet Kitty, sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is Gilda. And Gilda is a supervisor for postcards to voters. In this picture, she is doing her job. She is looking over the postcards to voters that her human has written. And we're so proud of Gilda and her human for doing postcards to voters. So if you get a chance to do postcards to voters or knock on doors or make calls, please do so. And of course, Gilda Eats freshly poured cat food, our fake sponsor. Whether you serve pet store perfection or dollar store dreck, your cats will sit on the kitchen floor and demand that the food they eat is only freshly poured. Freshly poured, freshly poured. Oh my Lord, it's freshly poured. And you can visit Gilda and see all the beautiful postcards to voters there at our Facebook page or website. And you can send your internet kitty, dog, or other pet to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Regardless of what kind of animal you send to us, please put the word kitty in the subject line of your email. That helps me find it. And feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service Go Postal Unions letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Hashtag Fire DeJoy. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. This is not charity. This is our job, and we love doing these podcasts. We love doing No Fair Remembering Stuff. There's another episode that dropped this week. Be sure to listen to that. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution you can too. See our website, proleftpod.com, for details. Our PayPal, Patreon, postal address, it's all there at proleftpod.com. We are still looking for Patreon donors. We need about 125 more donors to make a full-time, twice-a-week podcast a reality. And we're really hoping to do that next year. Please share our show on social media. And if you love this podcast, please get someone else to listen to. And thank you for doing that. Hey, Drift Class, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the internet kitties are enjoying the slow strip tease that all the trees around here are doing.
Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Just think about loving.
Think about loving.
Just think about the hooping and the hopping and the popping and the loving, lovey dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2022, DGBG Productions Incorporated.